You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Support for this podcast comes from U.S. Bank. When it's time for a new credit card, the best ones do way more than just buy stuff. And that's why U.S. Bank offers credit cards that make every day more rewarding. Earn cash back, score points when you shop, dine out, travel, or binge watch, or get a low intro APR. U.S. Bank credit cards were designed to fit your lifestyle. So make every day more rewarding and check out usbank.com/creditcard. U.S. Bank credit cards are issued by U.S. Bank National Association N.D. Some restrictions may apply. Member FDIC.
Where is the people? Where are, oh, here they are. Here's Jack. Got it.
Oh, we're live, I think.
I have no live message.
Oh, you don't? See, I have us going live. So,
well, then, just in case we are live, there it pops up. We are back, and we are live with some technical difficulties, and now the stream just jumped to 24 seconds. Which is incidentally how long I think Dominic Reyes could potentially last on Saturday night.
There you go.
There's the segue. UFC 247, nice. John Jones against Dominic Reyes. Here, I'm going to break down this card, every fight, talking DFS. I am your host, Daily Fantasy Sniper. With me, as always, the co-host, the analyst, Chris Olsen. You can find him on Twitter at RealChrisOlsen. Joe, better known as Sun Tzu. Guys, back for another pay-per-view card. Not a card I'll be spending $60 on, but a card that has got arguably the GOAT on it. I think I'm going to do a podcast somewhere else where I argue John Jones isn't the GOAT, but...
Wait. Did you say you're not going to... So you're not going to buy it, or it's not a...
I'm not going to buy it.
Really?
No.
Wow, okay.
No, I'm not paying $65 for this card. No, thanks.
Okay, I'd invite you over, dude, but it's a long drive. I mean, I'm buying it.
No. I'll find a way to keep up with the fights.
Well, okay. This card is like, we joke around a lot, like, oh, this, or we say a lot, oh, this isn't really a pay-per-view card. This is the first pay-per-view card in a while that actually feels like a fight night card. There's a lot of fighters on here that you have to look up because they're making their debut. There's a lot of fighters that have like two or three UFC fights on here.
It's so, top heavy. The card's super top heavy.
I think eight of the fights have fighters from Texas.
That's right.
Oh, by the way, I shout out to chat. If anyone can help me, if anyone who's watching Invicta while watching us and can tell me who the new commentator is on Invicta, I would be much grateful.
That being said, I also want to throw out to chat. I think one of my favorite comments in a while is already posted by MMAKO, because we've already had one fight happen this weekend, and it's Yoel Romero 1, Izzy 0. He clearly won the dance off. One of the more entertaining weigh-ins you'll see in a while. But let's get down to business. Let's talk UFC 247. But before that, I have to tell you to make sure to like, comment, subscribe to the podcast, and also go to rotowire.com/free for a 10-day free trial to all their premium content. No credit card required, daily fantasy, season-long optimizers, all that good stuff. Subscribe on iTunes to RotoWire MMA. Like, comment, subscribe to RotoWire on iTunes. If you are watching it live, welcome to the guys in chat. And let's just jump right to it, because we are going to talk. There's not a ton of dogs on this card. There's one line value spot I don't like, one I do like, and this is my favorite underdog on the card. We have Austin Lingo taking on Yusuf Zalal. Lingo's 8,900. Zalal is 7,300. My boy is a plus 185 dog. Lingo is minus 200 on the comeback. Fight doesn't go to decision, minus 170. So that spells it smells like a good GPP fight. Sun Tzu, we'll start with you. Joe, what do you got for this fight?
Yeah, I mean, you know, this is a weird fight. I mean, you got Lingo, who is a Texas boy, trains at Fortis, 7-0, flash finishes, against a guy who is, in his last three fights, is 1-2. So on paper, it's really kind of weird. I mean, he did win, I guess, his last fight in, you know, spectacular fashion with a flying knee. I was ready to dismiss him until listening to James Lynch. Apparently, James Lynch has heard some things from this guy's camp, Zahal, that, you know, he is a one of the, you know, best guys at the camp. Apparently, you know, maybe gets a little nervous sometimes, but, you know, at what, 7.3K, I think he's worth a stab, and it's probably a good fight to target. And I would certainly caution people against going all in on Lingo, looking at that 7-0 record and thinking, you know, lock and load. But I think it's a good fight to target. I'm going to have exposure to both sides. I guess I'll pick Lingo to win just because he is the local guy, you know, training at Fortis. But I think you should have some exposure to both sides.
I will say Lingo is a one-dimensional boxer. He's super aggressive. Every second this fight's on the feet is danger for Zalal, but I think he gets it down eventually. And he's just long. I think he just has to avoid the early bum rush. There's every chance Lingo knocks him out in the first 45 seconds. It totally could happen. But I think past that, I think Zalal's got tons of tools to win this one. Chris?
Well, Joe kind of disappointed me because I watched him with Brett yesterday, and he was calling him Ringo. And then he opened up here calling him Ringo, and I have my Beatles joke already, and he didn't call him Ringo. I'm going to do it anyway. I wonder if Austin can win this fight with a little help from his friends. But anyway, I think Sean summed it up pretty well. The thing about Lingo is he's one of these guys. His fights don't go very long. He blitzes forward and he knocks his opponents out. Thing is, though, that's part of what got Zalal beat in his last loss was a guy who just kept taking it to him. And now that guy seemed to be a pretty experienced judoka, using a lot of judo throws. And I will say that Zalal's pretty scrambly on the ground, too. He's at least a worker from his back when the fight goes there. But I like Zalal. I like his in-and-out movement. He seems to be very quick. I just wonder if the rushes from Lingo are going to get there, because if they don't work, then Zalal is going to have his way. But I think he might have a little trouble finding his range here. Ultimately, I'm going to pick Zalal because I think he's just the way, way more technical fighter who actually has like an idea of what he wants to do besides bum rush and then like maul you. But I think Lingo is pretty definitely live to a knockout. I also think because people don't know a lot about this dude, that could depress his ownership at 8,600. So I like him as a play, but I think the pick of the fight is going to be Zalal.
I'm moving on. Second fight of the night. Odds value spot. I think people could get caught up in. We have Andre Yule at 8,400 taking on Jonathan Martinez at 7,800. Line on this fight, Yule's minus 120. A little bit of value on Martinez at plus 110, and it's moving a little bit. If the line's actually at dead pick'em, minus 105, 115 in some spots. So movement towards Martinez. Overall, I think, regardless of who you like in this fight is dog shit for DraftKings and is a better fight to bet on if you have a lean than for DK. If this fight scores well, I'm going to have a rough night. But give me Andre Yule, as I think he's the better rangy striker. But it is a close matchup, but one I don't really care about for DK. Chris, I know you have an opinion on this one.
Yeah, this is actually for a betting article that I wrote that you can check out on my Twitter or at rotowire.com. I have a link on my Twitter. But I picked Yule to win. I think that he has got one really major advantage in this matchup, which is his, well, more than one. But one major one is his speed. I think that if you watch Jonathan Martinez as a striker, what he likes to do is he's really aggressive. He pressures you forward, but he's not good at cutting off the cage. And that, is, I think, is going to allow Yule, who is a really precise counter striker. We saw that our first introduction to him was him fading back and landing a fadeaway left hand that almost knocked out Henan Barão. So that's really what he likes to do, is be a sniper. I think he's going to have a lot of opportunities to do that here. I also think that Jonathan Martinez, offense on the feet, basically relies on a kicking game. And I think that Yule is just a better kickboxer. So the one problem you always have in an Andre Yule fight is he's bad at takedown defense. But it's kind of not necessarily paradoxically, but you maybe wouldn't expect the guy to be taken down so often for him to be as scrambly and good at getting out of submissions as he is. We've seen that a couple times here. I mean, it didn't work against Nathaniel Wood, but that was more of, you know, club and sub. Wood just had his number in that fight. So, yeah, Jonathan Martinez is good to me, but a little one-dimensional. I like the body work from Yule. I just think he's a way better all-around fighter. And, you know, I wouldn't put it past him to find one of those hammers as Martinez rushes in sloppily. So I like Yule here. I like it a little more for DK than Sean does, and UL is the pick.
Joe?
Yeah, so I have to agree with Sean. I mean, Yule has never scored more than, what, 72 DraftKings points. Martinez has never scored more than 76 DraftKings points. Not a fight I'm really looking to target. And generally when that's the case, you know, in mass entry GPPs where I want to get, you know, some exposure perhaps to all fights, I'll probably take the odds value. But again, there are 12 fights. I don't know that you, I guess if you're looking to, you know, pass on a fight, this is probably a pretty good candidate. You know, although Martinez did win his last fight in the third round with a flying knee, he seems to only beat Chinese fighters.
Still scored 71 points.
In the UFC, yes, scored 71 points because it was late, but at least he showed a finish. I'm gonna go with the slight upset, the slight odds value, but I really don't see a ton of value in this fight. It's just that Martinez seems to fit better in lineups at his price point, and I sure as hell would not pay up for Andre Yule.
All right, moving on. We have Domingo Pallarte, 8,200, taken on Journey Newson at 8,000. Pallarte -120. Comeback on Newson +110. Fight goes to decision is -160. Pallarte going to be huge in this fight. I think he has a grappling advantage. He's like 7 inches taller. I like Pallarte a bunch in this one. Joe, how about you?
Yeah, so, you know, Pallarte, in the words of, you know, Cody Safik, shit in the apple pie. Last fight against Kolaris, who, you know, we've obviously seen Kolaris, you know, has got a chin on him and is hard to put away. But he was a massive favorite, you know, in the last fight. He was, what, -365, I think he went off at, and was pretty high priced on DK2 and reasonably highly owned. And, you know, he lost the split decision to Kolaris. I guess I'll go back to the well just because of, you know, his grappling and wrestling advantage. Newsom is tough, but you know, his he can probably out physical Pallarte's early, but I guess I do think that he has a, you know, Pallarte has a distinct advantage on the ground. You know, he does have a height and length advantage. I'm going to go back to the well with him one more time. This is not a fight I love to target. But I guess I'll go with Pallarte one more time.
Chris.
Yeah. Well, we know that Pallarte is really tough. That's not a great thing to know about a fighter after we've seen him two times, because what it means is he gets hit an awful lot, and Pallarte does. He very much has that Luke Rockhold defense where it's just a tall guy who tries to pull back. And then when he tries to pull back, he gets killed for it. The reason I'm picking him here, and actually more convincingly than I would have thought before looking at tape, is that we just saw Newsom struggle with a big, tall, rangy guy. And Pallarte is even bigger than Ricardo Hamish is. Not by a lot, but by a decent amount. And I think I see a lot of people picking Newsom here just because of how, like I said, how Plarte had to show off his chin in those two fights, his contender series fight and then his official debut. But those guys were significantly more rangy than a guy like Newsom, who's going to have to try to close this distance. He's going to be liable to eat knees. He's going to be liable to eat uppercuts. If they do get tied up, Plarte always looks for the back. He always looks to create scrambles. And I just think the length and the size of Plarte is going to pay dividends there. So I think this is a really hard win for Newsom, unless he really connects clean with Plarte's chin, which could happen. But he was just out of range so often in that Hamosh fight that I can't trust it. So yeah, my pick is Plarte, and I'll take it by submission.
Miles Johns, 8,600, taking on Mario Bautista, 7,600. Line on this fight, Johns is -127. Comeback on Bautista, +117, 110 in some books, 105. I think this line is going to flip. This is odds value I like. I like Bautista in this one. I think Miles Johns, he kind of showed it. If he can't get a takedown, he seems to be in trouble. I think Bautista will be able to stay on his feet. Yeah, I like Bautista for an upset in this one. And either way, the price is right at 7,600. This is odds value I like, especially in cash games where the fight goes to decision prop is -225. So you should get three rounds of scoring from Bautista regardless in a fight where he has odds value. And I'm picking him to win straight up. So you can argue his upside isn't there for GPPs and it'll be popular. I get that argument if you want to fade him. But Bautista is my pick here. Chris.
Yeah, I've liked Bautista in the past. But I'm gonna stay away from it here. I think the main reason is that when he's exchanging on the feet, he loves getting into those wild exchanges. We saw that a lot in the Jinsu San fight. And if Jinsu San had Miles Johns' power, I think Bautista would have been knocked out in that fight a couple of times. I just don't think he's gonna be able to afford to sit and trade in the pocket like he likes to do here. He might be able to stay on his feet, but I think that I don't think Jinsu San completed that many takedowns, but he got him off his feet a couple times. What we saw is Bautista using his base well and getting back to his feet, so he can do that again here. But I don't know. For me, it's just that Bautista's gonna, I think he's going to take too many chances on the feet here. He's the better grappler. If I thought he was going to doggedly pursue takedowns, I'd have a better time with it. But something just sees me with him in these exchanges and then eating the hammer and getting knocked out. So I'm taking Miles Johns here.
Joe.
Yeah, so I'm on Bautista here. Fight of the night against Son last time out. MMA lab guy. Of course, Johns is a Fortis guy from Texas. So, you know, kind of going against the, you know, the Texas bias there and the Fortis bias. At 7.1K against Son, he landed 129 significant strikes, scored 95 DraftKings points at 7.1K. I'm not expecting him to repeat that here, although this is kind of a striker versus, you know, Tashawn's, you know, someone who's going to look maybe to grapple. You know, two split decisions for Johns. I mean, he only scored against, you know, in his split decision win against Smith. He only scored like 61 points. I like this fight. I think it's a decent, it could be a decent fight to target, but I'm definitely going to be, there's odds value in Bautista. I like where he trains. I think that he's the much more prolific striker. He's a volume striker. I'm going to just go with the odds value and take Bautista here.
Moving on, we have Alex Morono at 9,100 taking on Chaos Williams at 7,100. Morono, big favorite in this fight, -330 right now. Comeback on Kalen Chaos Williams is +300. Fight doesn't go to decision, -125, which to me actually seems a little low because Kalen Williams is a wild man who's either going to knock you out, get countered and knocked out. And when he gets tired, he shoots sloppy takedowns. And Morono's got a decent BJJ game. If you can't tell, I'm on Morono here. And Williams puncher's chance. That's really it. I don't think he's very good at all. And I think Morono is going to go under-owned in the price range he's in, quite honestly, because everyone's going to want to pay up to, you know, Jones and Shevchenko. And I think Morono could get a little lost. Good GPP play for me. Joe.
I like Morono here. I mean, the last time he was 9.1K was against Zach Otto, and he put up 114 DK points. Max Griffin, that was a gritty win against Max Griffin, put up 81 DK points at 8K. And then against his third fight that he won was against Song, 79 points at 7.9K. So he's been, you know, he's been at or exceeding 10X. I think this is tough, a tough fight for Williams. I mean, you know, Morono is tough. He's a veteran, trains at Fortis, Texas guy. I just think everything's lining up here for him to win. And I really hope he will go under-owned, to your point. I don't think he's going to be as low-owned as you might think, simply because, you know, he's taking on a newcomer to the UFC who's taken the fight on short notice. Yes, he's 9-1. But I still think that, you know, Morono should be able to not only win, but get the finish here. And, you know, he has a history of getting 10X on fights that he wins. So I will take Morono here.
Chris.
So I think I have a much more definitive take than Joe. I Chaos Williams seems to me like someone who is still thinking about what he's doing in there while he's in there. It's weird to me because when you watch him fight, he's obviously an athletic guy, but you don't see any of that explosiveness in the cage because it I don't know. It just seems like I said, it seems like he's got to think about what he's doing. Like he throws these slow shots that like his opponents can just evade pretty easily. I actually have seen him hit a nice trip takedown or two, but again, would he want to go to the ground? Well, with Morono, I doubt it. I just don't think that, and Morono can get hit some, but that I've seen nothing from Chaos Williams that to tell me that he can compete with a guy this experienced at this level. I just don't see it.
You look at the two guys and you're like, if you knew nothing about either fighter and you just looked at them standing next to each other, you know, Moreno has got like the dad bod, and you got this guy all bricked up.
Oh yeah,
you know, Williams. You look at these two guys and you're like, Moreno's got no shot. You know, just looking at these two guys physically. But then if you look at some of his wins, I'm looking at he fought a fighter who's currently 17-20, you know, and he got a win. I mean, you know, I don't know a lot about like this organization that he fought out of. I've heard of KOTC and Total Warrior. I'm not really sure about that one, but you know, WXC, I don't know that one. But anyway, yeah, I just think it's a tough one for him, you know, to do this. Yeah, he's got a good record. He's 9-1. I don't know a lot about his camp either. You know, his last win was against 35-year-old Jeremy Holloway. You know, decent win, but still, you know, a decision. I don't know. I mean, I'm with you.
Yeah, I mean, for sure, Morono has got it. I don't like how flat-footed he stands. I think he can wing shots sometimes, but there's nothing I've seen from Chaos Williams that tells me that, like, if Morono throws one of those big winging hooks, that Chaos can respond with a precise counter shot or anything like that. I just haven't seen anything close to it. So to me, the big pick here is Morono, and I guess I'll prepare to be surprised because I just don't see it any other way.
Yeah, I'll be surprised too, but. I mean, Williams has got a puncher's chance. That's pretty much it. Andrea Lee, 9,200. Lauren Murphy, 7,000. Line on this fight, KGB is -305. Lauren Murphy is +275. Fight goes to decision, -365. Andrea Lee, though, to me, still puts up decent volume, even though she goes to a decision. I also would argue this is... I don't care that she's won a couple of fights. I think this is... I think Lauren Murphy is her weakest opponent in the UFC to date. Joe, what do you think about that analysis? I like KGB Lee more than most.
Yeah, look, I don't know that it's going to be a great fight for DraftKings because Murphy has got the veteran guile to stick around. You know, she's just very awkward. She's not super athletic. I wouldn't read too much into her last fight against Borrello. You know, again, I think this is a redemption fight for KGB. I mean, I honestly believe that if she beat JoJo Calderwood, that it would be Andrea Lee who was fighting Shevchenko today in the co-main. You know, she's very marketable, nice smile, borderline Texas. I really do think this is a fight for Andrea KGB Lee to win. However, I don't know that I see value at her price point for DraftKings. I mean, if anything, maybe a contrarian play. I have a feeling she's going to be one of the lowest owned fighters in the upper tier.
In GPP, what about cash?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, okay. So she's probably, but I mean, I guess I'd rather pay up a couple hundred and get Val. If I was looking for safety in cash, because look, what would you be more surprised of? Would you be more surprised if Lauren Murphy, pulled off some tricky, win against KGB or Chookagian beats Val?
Well, obviously, but the few hundred dollars is a big difference, especially when I'm going to argue you can use Chookagian in cash later.
Well, yeah, see, I don't like Chookagian at all, but I don't even like her if you're playing 20 lineups to put her in one lineup.
No, I didn't say GPP.
We'll talk about it.
Yep, we'll get there. But just to clarify, yeah. Chris, how about you for this fight?
Yeah, I Vince posed an interesting question in chat that I put on the screen briefly. It's Andrea Lee does seem to be a big favorite in all her fights. This time, I think it's really justified. If you watch Lauren Murphy, like that was a great win for her. She's been around a long time. It's cool to see her get a finish. I mean, that was a fight where she could basically win it just by pressuring forward. And even if she fell short, which she did a lot and does a lot, Barella just didn't really have too much except for like her own remedial boxing game, and it just seemed like. The veteran savvy of Lauren Murphy basically won her that fight. I don't think that's going to be the same with Lee here. Lee's got a bunch more tools than someone like Barella. She can use her takedown game. She's got a nice jab, which is going to be in play if Lauren Murphy just tries to walk forward, pressuring as she does every fight. I think Andrea Lee takes this pretty easily. I don't see anything from Lauren Murphy that tells me that, like, the fight, she won it, and that's great, but she was basically doing everything that we criticize her doing in all her other fights. She was falling short, she was constantly missing her range, and Andrea Lee is just going to make you pay for that. She's too experienced a striker, she's too good a striker. So my pick is Andrea Lee. I think it's pretty much a layup, and I think she can do a lot of damage here.
All right, here we go. The fight everyone's talking about right now. Trevin Giles, 8,500, taking on the super short notice, the 16-hour short notice replacement of James Krause. Hope Antonio Arroyo is all right. From what, if you didn't see it on Twitter, he was found semi-unresponsive or unconscious. Not all the way conscious is what I read. Something along those lines. Was taken to the hospital. I'm assuming related to his weight cut. I didn't get a chance to read a ton of this. You know, he weighed in fine, but, rehydrating, who knows? I don't want to speculate because I did just read it. This is the new fight we have. I can't find odds on it anywhere yet, so that's gonna be interesting. Trevin Giles 8,500, James Krause 8,100. This fight is at 185. Krause fights at 170 typically. He's also a coach, so it's not like he's crazy out of shape. He trained Zalal, who we talked about earlier, who's going to kick off this card. Chris, I'm gonna kick it to you, and then I'm gonna let you guys know I have to run and take care of something real quick. I should be back by the time you guys finish your spiel, and this could be all unnecessary, but just in case, I'll be right back.
All right. Just a question for Joe or you, if you know, just before you go. Getting a thing, do we know where that fight is on the card yet or no?
No, we don't have odds. I think it's just replacing it.
Honestly. Yeah, I think it's going to stay in the same spot on the card, and they put up Krause on DK at 8.1.
Right, yeah, no, I did see that. Okay, so My pick for the fight is, look, I think we have to give it up to James Krause. I think he's gotten way better in recent fights. He's using his kickboxing and his length really well, I think, recently. Whereas before, I think he himself was more of a grappler. But I think that, it's weird. We can't really glean that much from the Sergio Moraes win, or at least I can't, because it didn't look like Moraes was all there in that fight, especially after the first round. It just sort of seemed like he quit, but was still in the fight. I don't know if the leg kicks that Kraus was landing had an effect, but he did seem to give up. But regardless, I do think Kraus has improved, and that deserves to be mentioned. But I also think that he still gets hit way too much. He was still getting hit by that Sergio Moraes, who didn't appear to be all there in the second round. And Trevin Giles is really fast, and he's really powerful. And he's definitely not going to be the grappler again here. I've said in the chat before that I think if Trevin Giles does what he did in his last fight against Gerald Meerschaert and inexplicably goes back to these grappling exchanges and back and back and back, then I think James Kraus wins. I hope that somebody threw some cold water in his face after that fight and said, "What are you doing? Stand up." I think if he stands up, he wins this fight. I think he's going to pick James Kraus apart. I really do. If it goes to the ground, it's Kraus's fight. But otherwise, I like Trevin Giles before. Like, if this was a full camp, I'd like Trevin Giles. So I certainly like it with, you know, less than 24 hours notice and the whole thing. So yeah, my pick is Trevin Giles, with the caveat that he stays on his feet.
Yeah, Trevin Giles has got two other jobs that are likely more important than this one. He's a full-time police officer and a full-time dad. He is prone to gassing late, getting beat by guys way less athletic than he is. I'm going to go with the serious fighter, the full-time fighter here. I mean, I like James Kraus. I mean, I like the Royo, but I like Kraus. He's coming off a 7-fight win streak. Sean alluded to, you have to believe that, given that he's a coach, that if he's not in top-notch fight shape, he's at least in some form of shape, you know, that I believe. Yeah, so this fight is at middleweight. He doesn't have to worry about cutting weight, likely. I mean, I'm going to take a shot with Kraus here. I think he's a sneaky play at 8.1K. And, yeah, Giles has got his back up against the wall, but I don't know that there's any downside here for Kraus. I think he's going to be really loose. He's going to go out. He's going to do his type of fight. I mean, you know, people have been underestimating him for a couple of fights, but I really do like him here. I am not a Giles guy. Until I hear that he's actually made a commitment to fighting. And look, I admire the heck out of his occupation of choice. Being a dad is the best thing in the world. But it seems like when fighting comes in third, that you're not going to really last long in the UFC. Maybe he could fight part-time in a regional promotion. So give me the dog here. Give me James Kraus. Well, assuming he's going to be the dog. Give me James Kraus. And I think he's a sneaky play at 8.1K.
So, Joe, this is all very new. What do you think the ownership is going to be like?
Yeah, that's a good question, man. Yeah. I don't know. I don't know what the ownership is going to – I am not great. I'm not a big ownership guy. Like, I'm not great at predicting ownership. I would guess that, you know, coming off of 7 wins and being a fairly recognizable name in the UFC – I think Kraus will catch some ownership, but there's also going to be, we all know this, there's also going to be dead money on Arroyo. There always is. You know, the later in the week the fight gets canceled, the more dead money you see, right?
You need some odds, too.
There's going to be some dead money on Arroyo. I guess Giles will probably be high. Well, I don't even know.
It's all depending on what the lines are. That's going to tell you everything.
Yeah, I guess.
Did you give your pick before you
I haven't had enough time to look at this fight, so right. I can't give one yet. My gut right now is leaning Giles, just because of the size, and you know, he's fought as low as lightweight before, but I need to see how big the size advantage is, because skill wise I kind of like Kraus here, but that's the spot I'm in right now. I'm probably going to play this one with the odds. I'm going to see where the odds value takes me.
Oh, by the way, I just want to give a shout out to, I just noticed in chat that MMAKO is in chat. And if you've never seen this guy's vids, he does these really cool high production value vids. There's like really great music in the background. And
yeah, very creative.
He uses the videos as a way to, like, you know, put his picks out there. Really, really cool vids. And I missed him in Boston. You know, it's too bad, but definitely going to hook up with this guy one day, maybe even do something with him because he's really got great production value in his vids. So just a small segue. Thanks for, you know, thanks for jumping in chat.
Just a little poll from the audience. We do have a Tyler Mead says he's expecting Krause to be a big value by the time the fight starts. So, okay. So yeah, it'll be interesting. Like Sean says, I do think it does hinge on the line value. Once we get that, we'll have a much better sense, I think.
All right, let's move on. Derek Lewis, 9,000. The light heavyweight, Aleir Latifi, 7,200. Yeah, line on this fight, Lewis minus 215, Latifi plus 195. Fight doesn't go to decision, minus 260. I like Lewis. I don't think Latifi can stay conscious. I'm worried about the output. And at 9,000, if Lewis doesn't do it in the first round, we've seen him score garbage on DK plenty of times before. But I like him. I like this is a GPP fight. I do think Latifi is live because he should be faster in this fight. But, you know, Lewis is always losing until he wins. And fighting in Texas, I also think we're just going to see a different Derek Lewis. That's narrative-based, but I think we're going to see a very mean black beast. I like him. Another pay-up option I like, but Latifi, live dog for your GPP lineups. I don't know who went first or last time. I heard Joe talking, so I'm going to start with Joe.
Chris. Oh, yeah, that's right. I went last. So, yeah, look, again, there is a lot of narrative here on Lewis. I do think he's picked up his training a bit. He wants to put in a good show in front of, you know, Houston. He's very big in the community. You know, obviously that could be distracting in some instances, but I just think, honestly, this is a bad stylistic matchup for Latifi. I mean, the size difference is huge. I mean, don't tell me with a straight face that Latifi is 5'10". He's maybe 5'8", you know, going up against Lewis. So the issue for DraftKings is that if you don't get – Lewis is very low output. So if you don't get a finish from him relatively quickly, he's not going to score real well. And he is priced up. So I've been kind of flip-flopping on whether this was a fight I wanted to target. Part of me thinks he could starch Latifi early. But then the other part of me says if this goes deep, you're not going to get points out of Lewis, and he's not going to be that great of a DraftKings play. So I'm not honestly sure how much I'm picking him to win the fight, but I'm not sure yet how I'm going to play him on DK.
Chris.
Yeah. Okay. So this was one of my picks, my betting for you as well. I've seen a lot of people saying stuff like, I mean, I think the main argument, Sean just went over that Derek Lewis is just too big and there's no way for him to get past the range and the size, but the problem
and Latifi can't stay conscious if he eats one shot.
Well, okay, I don't know. Have we seen him get deaded from one shot before? I don't know if
him get deaded. Period. At light heavyweight, and now he's fighting a heavyweight.
Sure, but those were accumulations, right? I don't deny that Derek Lewis is obviously the most powerful guy he's ever fought. But my point was just going to be like if we're just talking about range and height. Well, we've already seen him do that once. In fact, OSP has got an inch on Derek Lewis as far as reach goes. So we have, as a matter of fact, seen him negotiate that height and reach pretty well and get a finish out of it. Now, they're not the same fighter. Obviously, Derek Lewis isn't as athletic, and so that's a point in Latifi's favor. But I mean, I think everybody would agree that OSP is not as dangerous as Derek Lewis is, especially in specific moments where Derek Lewis can be very dangerous. So with that, there is something, but I don't know, I guess like this fight is sort of a referendum for me on size versus speed. I'm going speed here. I'm going speed, and I'm also going a variety of technique. All those guys that Aleir Latifi lost to, when there were some bad losses, they were obviously more athletic, right? Obviously, because it's a smaller weight class. But they also had a much vaster array of skills and strikes and ways that they could do things. Derek Lewis, I mean, he doesn't even pressure all the time. Like sometimes he'll start out pressuring, then when he wants to take a break, he sort of just stands in the middle of the cage. So I don't think that Latifi is going to gas himself out quite as much here because he's not going to have a guy like Volkan bearing down on him all fight. like the way his last fight played out. And I also think the single legs he was trying against Volkan, they're gonna pay dividends here. Now there's a question as to whether he can hold Derek Lewis down, because Derek Lewis can explode up a lot. But I mean, with Derek Lewis, you're talking about a guy who, you know, I just went through a split decision with Blago Ivanov. Now there's some question. I probably think he won all three rounds, but the fact is that Ivanov had a lot of success in that fight. So yeah, I don't know.
Also got a win over Francis Ngannou.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. He's got a big scalp there, and that's hilarious too. Because if somebody wasn't, like, if they never saw that fight and they just went to like Tapology or something, they'd be like, "Oh my God, he beat Ngannou." But little do they know. But yeah, so look, I acknowledge the danger of Latifi getting swept here, but I also think that if it doesn't happen, Derek Lewis isn't even necessarily somebody who can capitalize on him getting tired. Partially because Derek Lewis will be tired himself, but also because Derek Lewis just doesn't really come after you like that. Again, he's dangerous in very specific segments, and in those segments, he's extremely dangerous. But when we're not in that phase of the fight, I don't know. I just think Latifi is gonna have a lot to say about the pacing and how the fight goes down. So yeah, my pick is Latifi.
Yeah, I'm telling you, though, one point I want to make.
Whoa!
What happened?
Who's echoing like bad?
You. All of us.
Are we good? Hello. We good?
You're good.
There you go.
Okay.
What'd you just?
Yeah. So one point I wanted to make on Lewis is, you know, on Latifi, on his fight against Ivanov is, and thanks, Nan, for pointing this out. Lewis was really hitting Ivanov with power shots.
Yeah, he
Ivanov
was.
Is a guy, for people who don't know, I think got like stabbed in the heart, you know, in wherever he's from, Bulgaria, or, you know, he's a tough guy, right? And Lewis was really hitting him hard. Not too many people can stand up to that power. Plus, it's Lewis's birthday. So I really do see Lewis getting the win here and hopefully getting a knockout.
All right, moving on. The real, in my opinion, this is the people's main event. 100%. Mirsad Bektik, 8,300, taking on Dan Ige at 7,900. Bektik -120, comeback on Ige +110. Fight goes to decision -150. Both guys like to grapple. I just think Bektik is better on the feet. I think he's got, even though Ige has got more knockouts and knockdowns, I think Bektik actually throws harder. I think that they're going to end up, I think Bektik is more likely to get takedowns in this fight. Bless you. And I think he's just a little better everywhere. Super close fight. I'm a big fan of Dan Ige. He's made me a ton of money. I just shade towards Mirsad Bektik here. But close fight. Chris.
Yeah, super close fight. A tough one to call for me. I think I'm going Ige very slightly here, just because I think he's the more put together striker, and I think he's the more fluid striker. And I think when they exchange, as look, Bektik loves to exchange. He that loss against Darren Elkins was because he just had to exchange and wouldn't grapple.
No.
I have that backwards. You're right. I do have that backwards.
His loss is because he beat the ever loving piss out of Darren Elkins for 10 minutes. And got tired.
Yeah, that's true. I think I'm misremembering that fight. But anyway, regardless, I just think that Ige is the more fluid striker here. I think that Bektic comes off to me a little tentative when he strikes. Like, he throws his like little formulaic 1-2s and stuff. But I think what he really wants to do is grapple. And I think he's going to stand a little bit too long here. And those exchanges are going to go the way of Dan Ige, I think. But I do think that, like, in his last fight, Bektic against what's his name, the alpha male guy who's really quick? I always forget.
Josh Emmett.
I think he was a little bit more in his defense. I think he was a little bit more reticent to go for a takedown because of the strong wrestling base of Emmett. So I do think we could see a lot more of that here. And if that does happen, I think that that's his world, and he's going to get a nice win. But I think as long as it stays on the feet, and I think it might stay there a little too long, I think that Ige is going to have a big advantage. So it's going to come down to how well Bektic can execute a game plan, and that's not something you really want to rely on when you're talking about a guy like Mirsad Bektic. So, I'm going to go Ige ever so slightly, but it's going to be an interesting fight for sure.
Yeah, I like PJ a lot more than slightly here. I mean, let's look at Bekthik's last five fights. I mean, he has not had an impressive performance against a good fighter, you know, going back to 2016. Russell Doane was a layup. I even think Doane might have been a short-notice replacement. You could check me on that, but he's a guy that's no longer in the UFC. Loses to Darren Elkins after, you know, beating him up for a few rounds and then just gassing. Pepe, okay, wow, big deal, Pepe, right? Then he goes against Lamas. Lamas is a shell of his former self. And
that's still a good win. Come on.
Oh, come on.
That's still
a good win. He gets the decision and he scores 59 DraftKings points. Horrible, right? Then Emmett lights him up. Now, Emmett's got a lot of power, but I the way I see it is he has not had an outstanding performance against a good fighter going back to 2016. Ige, on the other hand, is rounding into form. Four wins. I believe he's the jiu-jitsu coach for his gym. You know, he's still relatively young. He's 28, I think. I really think that everything's coming in, you know, coming back to Ige here. I think, you know, he's the more technical striker. I think he's got better jiu-jitsu. Bekthik probably has the wrestling advantage. Ige definitely has more fight IQ, better fight IQ here. 7.9K, sign me up.
Yeah, moving on, we have a heavyweight fight. God, you can't trust either of these guys, but load up in GPP. Juan Adams, 8,800. Justin Tapa, 7,400. Line in this fight, Adams is -230. Tapa is +210. Fight doesn't go to decision, -300. Adams can grapple him. Tapa can go to sleep. Juan Adams could also just quit because, I mean, he's just... Hopefully he's taking everything more seriously. He's living at Jackson Wink now. I think Adam gets it done, but I can't trust these guys in cash, and I'll have a ton of the fight in GPP. And that's how I'm playing it. Joe.
Yeah, so when I first looked at this fight, I said, you know, layup for Adams, right? They're flying a guy about as far as you can fly someone, you know, to take a fight. And I don't know if they allow heavyweights to fly business. So I'm assuming he's flown from Australia, or I guess he was doing his camp in Thailand, to Houston in economy class, you know, to take on a Texas fighter, you know, to your point, Sean, you know, who has spent the last camp at Jackson Wink, you know, although Tiger Muay Thai, where you know, the other guy did his fight camp, is not a bad camp either. It just seems to me like this was a layup fight for Juan Adams. And then I made the mistake of having some decks and doubts based on, you know, listening to Daniel Levy, you know, talk about Tapa doing his camp at Tiger Muay Thai. I still think that this fight is set up for Adams. They really like it. They really want Adams to win. So I think this is going to be, I mean, this has got a very high inside the distance prop. Fight probably should be targeted. I would have some exposure to both sides, but I'm still gonna take Adams to get the win by knockout.
Chris.
I don't know how you could ever come to the conclusion that Juan Adams is a layup in any fight. I do understand his play. He's a bigger, more experienced guy. He's a wrestler. He's sub 9,000. So I get to play from a DraftKings perspective. But here's the reason I'm picking Tapa, and maybe somewhat suicidally did so on my betting preview as well. But we'll see how it goes. Look, Juan Adams isn't that good. He beat his one win in the UFC comes against Chris De La Rocha. At the time, I think I either picked De La Rocha or came very close and said Juan Adams. I was getting a lot of heat for just doing that. And then they have like the sloppiest fight ever where De La Rocha wins the second round and they literally have to like stop and take breaks because both of them are so gassed out. So it wasn't pretty. But my point in bringing that up is that Juan Adams hasn't beat anybody good. He's beaten one guy in the UFC, and I think that if Justin Tapa and Chris De La Rocha fought, Tapa would probably beat him. Although I can't say for sure, I think that's probably the case. The reason I'm picking Tapa here is Juan Adams is just we haven't even seen that much wrestling proficiency from him. The only takedowns he actually got were in the De La Rocha fight, and those were just like running De La Rocha over. And and getting him down, which could happen here. And look, once he gets on top, he's a very big guy, and he gets his work done. But I'm not so convinced that, like, he's a good wrestler in the sense that, like, he's going to actively go for a lot of good takedowns. Look, Greg Hardy, who admittedly is a lot bigger than Justin Taffa, but was able to basically just shuck him off with his base. So, I mean, we're going to have to see how that goes. And on the feet, where Juan Adams likes to spend a lot of time, he throws arm punches. I mean, he just does. He doesn't have a lot of power. And so Taffa's tendency to just bull rush in, that got him knocked out by like a hammer from hell by Yoren De Castro, is not going to be at play here. Juan Adams is not going to be able to make him pay like that. I think that he's going to be able to bring a lot of pressure. I think he's going to hit very hard. He's going to be the most varied striker that Juan Adams ever fought. I can't believe I'm saying that, but that tells you the level of competition we have here. And I just think that the line is way, way off. So yeah, I'm taking Taffa here, and we'll see what we get.
By the way, guys, I just saw in Slack, DFF yep, Army Slack, that Kraus is -165 on 5 dimes. Open -150, and now he's -165.
Yeah, I'm going to be editing some lineups.
Yeah.
Moving on, co-main event. Valentina Shevchenko, 9,500. Caitlin Chookagian, 6,700. Line on this fight. Shevchenko, depends where you look. 5 dimes, -855. If you were to go over to Inner Tops, -1,400. So, yeah. Chookagian around +700 across the board. Fight goes to decision, -180. So I don't hate a punt Chookagian if she throws it air, and the fight metric guys score tons of significant strikes. Wouldn't stun me. I expect decision here. Don't like this fight a lot for DraftKings, other than you could play Shevchenko in cash because she's super safe for a win, or you could play Chookagian in cash because it's a pure punt and get 5 wins elsewhere. Don't stack. It's one or the other for me, honestly. So that's what I got for this fight. Shevchenko wins. Let's not overanalyze it. Chris.
Yeah, I actually think this would be a better fight for Chookagian if she didn't recently change up her style. She used to be very movement heavy and very like in and out, and that was those are the phantom strikes that come into play that Sean is talking about. Over the last 2 fights though, she's actually made it a point to sit down on her strikes more, and I actually think that's hurt her because she doesn't really have a lot of power and she doesn't really have a lot of like crisp technique. So I really think that actually hurts her in a matchup like this. I think that Joanna is basically going to pick her apart if she tries to stay in the pocket. If she gets on her bike, it's a little more interesting. But even then, like, we still have to consider the wrestling advantage that Val is likely to have. I mean, if you remember back to her fight with Cachoeira, like the second she got hit, she went in for a takedown, so she might just not even choose to mess around. She probably could have, in fact, definitely could have just taken apart Cachoeira on the feet, but she didn't even go for it. She might just lean on her wrestling here as well. That'll be good for DraftKings. I don't know. I think actually the standing in the pocket version of Chookagian makes it a more viable fight for DK if you're taking Shevchenko, because I think she's got a lot more opportunities to be hit hard, and I think she will. So I don't mind taking Val as like sort of a pay-up contrarian play. I do agree that this fight likely goes to decision, but I do see avenues for Val to score some points. So I'd say keep that in mind.
Joe.
Yeah, so guys, we saw this fight already. On July 23rd, 2016, in Chicago, Holly Holm, Shevchenko at 135. You know, one thing I would say that Chookagian is a poor person's Holly Holm. One thing that Chookagian is seemingly good at is avoiding taking damage. If she can keep that up for 5 rounds, this could be an ugly, low-scoring fight, which Val wins, you know, quite easily by decision. By the way, in that fight against Holly Holm, Val put up 92 points. You know, at 9.5K, 92 points is not bad for cash, but it's certainly not going to get it done in a GPP. I do like Val. I mean, I think Val is going to have to do some chasing here. and maybe she can catch up with Chookagian, you know, in the later rounds. I do think this is an extremely safe fight. I'm not convinced that there aren't a few other 125ers that, you know, couldn't beat Chookagian. So I don't even know if this is the best matchup at 125 for Val, although it's the division doesn't have a whole lot of depth. I'm going to pick Val. I mean, I wouldn't necessarily bet Val by decision, or if you're really feeling frisky, you know, try to do a round bet, like pick Val to get a finish in rounds 3, 4, or 5, something along those lines. But, you know, I would certainly not lay that kind of number. There's just better opportunities to deploy my cash on the card. But, you know, give me Val here all day. Don't see it as being a great GPP fight, safe in cash. Val all day. Moving on.
Sean, we here?
Sean's on mute.
Oh, Sean, you're muted. No. Or maybe he's frozen. I can't tell. Sean?
I'm having some connection issues, but hopefully everybody can hear me now.
Yeah, you're good now.
Yeah, we got you now.
You're a little bit...
you guys got me? Hello?
You're in and out a little bit, yeah.
Is it really windy out there?
You're trying to
kick me. You got
to
kick me.
Yeah, maybe try to come back.
Yeah, I'm. We're having.
Okay, you want me to kick you out? Okay, he's got. He'll be back. We're about to go into our main event. I want to tell everybody, please, if you like what you're seeing now, like, comment, subscribe. It really helps us out with the algorithm and stuff. Here's Sean again.
John, a really cool scrap on Invicta right now.
Sean's still having some connection issues, it looks like.
All right.
You good? Let's
see, we good?
Yeah,
we're having...
You're coming in and out.
Yeah, you're still a little choppy.
Yeah, I know. It's like 20 to 40 miles an hour gusts, and yeah, it's no fun.
Yeah, we're up to like 60
my stream
gusts I've seen.
Yeah.
Well,
you seem to be okay now.
Yeah, you're good now.
All right. I'll give my quick on this fight, and then we'll get to it. John Jones, 9,400. Dominic Reyes, 6,800. Line in this fight, Jones minus 450. Reyes plus 400. Fight doesn't go to decision, minus 175. Going to steal from Joe here my narrative in this fight. I think John Jones is going to be angry. You think he's starting to hear people doubt him and not getting finishes, and it's a hunch. Because he typically wants to beat people at his own game. He didn't score well against Thiago Santos. He still did score well against Anthony Smith. Reyes, look, I just like heavyweight shallow. Yes, he got a left hand. I think that's all he's got here. If Jones decides to wrestle, it's a wrap quick. And I think he could still beat him striking. So I think Dominic Reyes will be overowned to what he should be. Not saying he's not live, but I'm going to get leverage by going underweight to him. Give me John Jones. Like him more than Shevchenko, probably my favorite pay up on the card. Chris.
Yeah, I'm picking John Jones. I want to give a little bit of a defense of Dominic Reyes before I get to it, just because I think the John Jones path is kind of straightforward. I think that there are other people who had this theory before the Thiago Santos fight, and certainly isn't my brainchild, but I do think we have at least a little bit of evidence that John Jones isn't that great of a range kickboxer. I think his strengths primarily are, of course, wrestling and the clinch. He excels in those two areas. But we saw with Thiago Santos, if you watch that first round, and it's tough to gauge anything after it, because I think at the end of that first round is when Thiago blew out his knee and his leg and all the other horrible things that happened to him. But if you watch that first round, it's basically just Jones waiting on Thiago and eating leg kicks and not responding to his rushes for the better part of 5 minutes. Now, there's a big difference, of course, between Thiago Santos and Dominic Reyes, and that's the fear that Thiago Santos puts in every strike. We talked about Derek Lewis before. I think that Thiago Santos is very much like that, a light heavyweight version of that. And every time he throws his hands, you know, you have to be worried that it's going to be the knockout shot. John won't have to have that much deference to the power of a guy like Reyes, but I still think that, you know, we saw that he can execute a step back counter in the Chris Weidman fight. He does that very well. I think he's got a decent kicking game himself. I agree that if Jones tries to wrestle, I think he should, but maybe he won't. We've seen John Jones try to almost defiantly in the past, and that might have been going on with the Santos fight too, almost defiantly try to beat his opponents where they're strongest. So if we see that again, that'll be interesting. Ultimately, I think what this comes down to is we've seen Dominic Reyes get tired, and we know that John Jones, as I said, is good in the clinch, can be sort of relentless with his elbows, and work in close. And I just think that I wouldn't be surprised if Reyes is looks good early. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if he has a good first round and a half. But I think over time, John Jones just wears on him and gets him here. And I think that there could be a lot of strikes thrown here, a lot of takedowns potentially, which I think makes a good play on both sides. But I think the attrition is going to get to Dominic Reyes a little bit because I don't see him with the kind of stopping power to take out of John Jones. So I'm taking Jones in what I think is going to be maybe a closer fight than most people think, but I'm still taking Jones.
Yeah. Let's you know, give a rest to the regression narrative and let's replace it with the fiscal narrative. So John Jones, for those of you who don't know, makes $500,000 win, lose, or draw. What that means is that $50,000 bonus for performance doesn't mean a whole lot to him. Look, 50K is 50K, but if you could fight three times a year and take very little damage while you wait for someone worthy to come into your division that could create the buzz around a super fight, why not? You know, like, I think Jones has been fighting smart. Now, maybe it's not the best for DraftKings, but he's still put up some pretty decent numbers along the way. And again, you're making $500,000 win, lose, or draw. There's no win bonus that he's working for here. Now, yes, he gets some pay-per-view points, and I'm sure there's sponsor money that he gets. But bottom line is, you know, you could fight once a year, get $500,000, go all in, take damage, get hurt, get a $50,000 bonus, or fight three times and get $500,000 each time. Plus, like I said, bide your time until you either decide to move up to heavyweight or someone worthy comes into your division that's going to create buzz around a super fight. So I don't think John Jones has regressed at all. I think he's just learned to fight smart, not take damage. Yes, it's not the most exciting fight style. I do think maybe he's going to step it up a little here. Reyes can get hurt. Look, we've seen him take shots. I would have liked to seen Reyes fight, have one more fight, perhaps against someone like, and again, I'm stealing somebody's thunder here, but maybe another fight against Anthony Smith, you know, maybe go up against Corey Anderson, Johnny Walker, you know, before he actually went up to fight Jones. But there's just so few opponents for Jones to legitimately have a fight against at 205 that, you know, they kind of pushed him up. I think it's going to be a pretty dominant win by Jones, either by decision or by finish. I don't see Reyes winning around here. I think Jones is probably a better play in GPPs versus Shevchenko in cash, but he's probably going to be higher owned as well. So take that for what it's worth. Give me John Jones here. Move on.
Hot takes time, guys. Everybody in chat, give us your hot takes for UFC 247. While everybody's thinking, I'll do the plug real quick. Go to rotowire.com/free, 10-day free trial to all their premium content. No credit card required. Like, comment, subscribe anywhere you are watching or listening. We'll highlight a couple chat hot takes. Chris, you got one queued up. You should just say Justin Taffa.
I was going to say, I love these cards when I have one, because I don't have to think about it a whole lot. Justin Taffa, knockout. It's probably going to come in the first round if it comes, so that's what we're saying.
Yeah, so there will not be a UFC champion on the optimal lineup.
Mm.
Okay, I like it. Give me Zalal by finish.
Ooh, nice. That's hot.
Yeah, that's...
Let's see. In chat, I'm not able to highlight them, Chris. So let's see.
Just read them out and I'll click on which chat.
Geronimo Reyes, KO third round. Ryan Barton says Newsom inside the distance.
Okay.
And I think that's all I really see here.
Come on, Nan.
Come on, guys. Let's get a couple more.
Where's your hot take, Nan?
We're only once a month now, guys. So you're squandering your opportunities here.
TJ, no fight of the night bonus with three split decisions. I think you mean the main card. That's weird. Oh, it could be talking about somebody else. Oh, here we go. Vince, Ige is the highest scorer of the card.
Wow.
I don't like that one. Somebody agrees with Chris. Tapa by KO.
Oh, nice, Thomas. I know that we've already said it, but I'm gonna put it up again just because it deserves it. I appreciate the courage there.
Thomas Tyner.
All right, guys, that's what we got. Appreciate you guys in chat. We'll see you on Fight IQ back on the next pay-per-view card, 248. Got to figure out what we're doing for 249. As I know Joe's going. I am 99.9% going, so probably still be able to make Friday night work, but we will figure it out. Good luck in your contests. We'll see you next time. Later, guys.
Thanks for hanging out, everybody.